history with the podcast guy, Matt King.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Unfortunately, for some, our topics that we talk about may be offensive to some people.
The topics that we discuss could also be triggers, and we want you to be aware of that.
If you are in need of help, please talk to a professional, a family member,
or a friend. We are not medical professionals, and we don't claim to be.
We are just two guys with a microphone
and a platform.
Please listen with discretion.
Welcome to This Time in History, guys. I'm Matthew, and we're back again with another interview covering the 2022 municipal election. Guys, remember, voting day is October the 24th, and early voting is the 7th to the 14th. Get out and vote. The only way to affect change is to be part of it. With me today, he's running for City Council, Ward 3, Etobicoke Lakeshore, Mr. Marco Valle. I hope I said that correctly.
You did, yes. Well, so my dad is Valle, but I am Valle.
Valle. Welcome to the show. I'll just call you Marco. How's that?
Sounds good, Matthew. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you for the invitation, and thanks for hosting all of these.
Thank you for coming. Now, in the interest of being upfront, I will tell you that I was a resident of Ward 3 for 13 years. But we'll get into it later. I am no longer a resident of Ward 3.
Well, that's unfortunate. You're missing out.
You know what? My wife, she's from the area. She grew up in the area. I grew up in Rexdale. So we moved back to Rexdale, but we'll get into it later. Because the issues we're going to discuss is mostly the reason we left. But let's start off engaging with the voters, with the listeners. And why don't you tell them why you're running, why this election, and why now? Go ahead.
Okay. So to think, like, it actually kind of started, like, the more I think about it, it started about 6 months ago. My neighborhood was getting sidewalks installed. I was actually out of town with work. And so I came back, my neighbor was telling me about it. And so him and I started complaining to each other, being like, who do we talk to? Like, what's the actual plan? How does this execute? And between that, him and I kept riling each other up. You know, we meet up at the fence every couple times, a month. And we started riling each other up, trying to figure out what's going on. How can we get involved? How can we have input? And then that kind of coincided with my wife and I. We used to run a lot and go out for walks in the neighborhood. And, you know, like everyone, we see all these towers going up, all these residential developments. But, you know, we don't see the simple things, like the roads aren't getting bigger. You know, never mind things like public facilities, parks, pools, community centers. The roads aren't bigger. Like, if we all went to work at the same time, no one's getting anywhere. Something as basic as that, right? And so these things all together kind of forced me to be like, what's going on here? What are we really doing? And then, so I've been in the military for 18 years. And part of that.
I want to thank you for that.
Oh, no worries. No worries. Thank you for your support. And again, like, thank you for what you're doing, right? Like, this is commitment in the same level in my mind. And so with the military, you know, as a leader, you need to affect the change you need or talk to the people who can. Through talking to my neighbor, I realized we don't know who to talk to affect it. And so talking to my wife, I was like, you know, like, this is crazy. And so I decided to lead that change and put my name in the ring and then see what happens, right? Throw my name in the hat, get in the ring and then see what I can do with this. And that's kind of where it started from. A little bit of like my own personal civil like confusion, as well as my own personal like confusion as to where this neighborhood's going. I now have a young son. Like, how are they going to get a first and last or a down payment, right? So thinking all these things, you know, I'm not the only one going through these, talking to my other neighbors, I realized someone needs to change something, and what better someone than me? I've been in the Army now a little over 18 years. I've been part of the civil service. So I figured, let's go for it. Let's do this. I like politics. I've had an interest in it. I understand it. Let's do it. Let's go for it. Let's change this area to what we want it to be and what we need as a community.
Absolutely. Right? I love that idea. I love it. So let's talk about, your platform, anything that you can share about it. And also, if you've started your community engagement or your door knocking, what kinds of things are you hearing at the door?
Okay. So I've done a little bit of all that. So I've got a website going.
Go ahead.
vote4marcovalle.ca. And what I'm doing right now is starting last week and it's going on until next week. Every Tuesday and Thursday, I'm launching a different part of my platform. And so I've already done housing. I've already done children's resources. Yesterday I did community resources. Tomorrow I'm going to do healthcare. And then next week I got infrastructure and transportation. And that's where I was supposed to end. But based on feedback I'm getting from people, they want to hear a little bit more about businesses. So I'm going to do at least one more on how I can help small businesses and actual small businesses, not the, the provincially defined 500 employees or less, real small businesses.
Like the ones on Lakeshore. Like exactly. The ones on Lakeshore. Like, what's going to happen to the sub shop at Islington and Lakeshore when my good friend on an unfortunate Montreal Canadiens fan passes away, George? I love that man. He is the only one that knows how to make a real sub. Sorry to interrupt you there.
No, not at all. But like, that's exactly it, right? We all have these little stores that were just a little store. And then you went in and maybe it was the food, maybe it was the atmosphere, maybe it was the person. You love it. You love it. We all have these little hidey holes that we all go to, but like, why don't they get support? Like, why are they the ones left having to pick up all the tatters of everything and having to rebuild around themselves? And it goes the same for the workers, right? The human beings living in these places, whether they're workers, whether they're small business, like they're left to pick up all the pieces every single time. And that, to me, that's crazy. It's absolutely insane. And so the reason I want to bring that up is because, like, I believe our infrastructure is failing everyone right now. And we've been underserved for so long that we're almost okay with it now, right? Like, we have two public, so let's start with the ward itself, right? It goes from Bloor down to the lake, from the 427 all the way to the Humber River. It's a huge piece of land, you know, a little over 140,000 people, according to the last census, 2021. We have two public daycares. They can house a total of 64 children under the age of four. Like, not even close to well good enough, right? We have right? Like, that's insane. We have one public long-term care facility. It can house 150 residents. Like,
Awesome. And also the waiting list is ridiculously long. I know we've inquired about someone to get them in there and
good luck, right?
It's just too long.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? Like, I actually, on the same note of like waiting things, I spoke to someone the other day at Jimmy's Coffee. He had an eight-week daughter in his arms, and he was telling me about how he's on a 3-year waiting list for daycare. Like, good luck. That's kindergarten. Like, now someone's choosing either not to work or to give up a mortgage payment in daycare, right? Long-term care facility, there's 150 residents that it houses. There's like 28,000 people over 65 in the ward, right? So like, we're underserved. Even things like the TTC, we have four subway stations, but it's still kind of disastrous to get to Toronto. And even if you do get there, don't you dare stay all night, because now it's a $70 Uber home, right? It's insane to me that we have four subway stations, three GO stations. But if you decided to stay a little bit late after the sporting event, the concert, the birthday party, well, now you're either sleeping there or you're taking an Uber or a cab or, you know, take your pick, but it's not transit anymore. To me, that's crazy. You know, if we were some small little town, like, that's okay. It happens. We're the biggest city in the country, top five in North America, you know, top 25 or so in the world. What do you mean you can't leave after one? That's crazy.
Exactly.
So that's, that infrastructure limits people in more ways than just your ability to go to Toronto and have a fun Saturday, right? Like, I, for example, commute about an hour every morning in my car because the subway is 2 hours and change to get there. Like, you're actively punished for it, right? And so that ties into our children's resources, right? Daycare is already expensive. If you have to choose between daycare and also taking the transit, like, you're probably going to stay home. Now you've taken either a professional hit, you've taken a financial hit. It's probably going to affect your housing. Like, it affects everything else in your life, right? Maybe you do afford a car. Maybe your job allows you to have it. Cool. Well, if everyone's going to work at the same time, we don't have the road space for it. That's why we all sit in so much traffic, right? So the infrastructure really limits everything else. And then once you start getting those kinds of limitations, that ties into children's resources, that ties into community centers, right? Like, if you're taking 2 hours on the subway each way or whatever, the bus, the streetcar, whatever it may be, do you have time to go home, get dinner ready, pick up your kids from daycare, go to the park, go to the sporting thing? Like, even if money's not an option, the time is, right? And that then takes us to the last. And I think this is the biggest problem. I think this is the big, well, not even problem, but it's the biggest thing on everyone's mind, housing. Whether you can afford it, whether you can't, whether you have it, whether you don't, it's on everyone's mind. It's affecting everybody. And true, well, you know what I'm going to say? If you're not a developer, you're not really feeling any relief.
Absolutely.
Right? And go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, I have a certain amount of topics we'll talk about. And if you want to, you know, we can talk about that part of your platform in each one of those topics. And then the only other question I had, sorry, was your community engagement and your door knocking. What kinds of things are you, what kinds of things are you hearing at the door? Is it, I'm curious.
Okay. No. So, so I've done a little bit of door knocking. Truthfully, I'm doing more of like, here's a flyer, but if you're out front, hey, how you doing, Matthew? You got a minute? Marco Valley, I don't want to interrupt your day. And so I've done a little bit of that. I met people at the park, go for walks every night with my wife. We go out, we walk. I stick around a little bit later, walking around, giving out some more flyers. I was also at the Taste of the Kingsway. I planned to be there for 2 hours, but honestly, like I just had such a great time talking to people that I was supposed to be there from 10 to noon. My wife left at noon with my son. I ended up staying till like 3:30. Like I got to watch the Practically Hip, which I love, but I definitely wasn't supposed to be there that long. Loved it. Had a great time talking to them. So the big things on their minds though, huge one, everyone open with the same. How do you feel about these developments? And so you're sitting there and you're like, okay, well, you know, this is how I feel. And it seems like everyone's in the same neighborhood because like, I'm okay with the developments. I have no problem with the developments. My problem and like the influx of people and everything, that's great. I love big communities. The problem everyone has is nothing else has been built around it. Like I live near Dundas, near the Kipling Station, where they're putting up and have put up already quite a few towers. There's notices in those lobbies that are like, hey, just because you live here, you're not guaranteed daycare and you're not guaranteed your kid goes to school in this area. They're probably going to get on a bus and go to a different ward for school. You know, anecdotally.
That I didn't know. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'll email you a picture of one over by the Queensway Theater there on Queensway and Islington. They have a giant one right on the side there. But yeah, so they're telling them that. And like anecdotally, we have a family or a friend, sorry, that wanted to move their family from Georgetown to this area. And they couldn't. They couldn't get daycare at all. So they sold and bought another house in Georgetown. They just flat out didn't come to the area. And so affordability is not just an affordability in the sense of having the dollars and cents. Like they had the dollars and cents, but the supporting resources aren't there. So you can have all the dollars you want. That doesn't change. Like if the resources aren't there, the resources aren't there, right? So we're limiting everybody with how we're doing that. So that's the biggest, everyone, what do you think about these developments? And then from there, I find they go into one of two places from there. They're either leaning more towards children because they have younger families themselves, or they lean a little bit towards senior services because they're a little bit older themselves. But I find that those two are very intertwined as well, right? Because if you have better community resources, they're both going to go there, right? A community center with programs will affect and improve the lives of senior citizens and of children, right? And we've seen improvements, you know, all over the world of where space, gathering space is having a positive effect on people's lives.
I'm just going to jump in for a second. You're facing a massively popular incumbent. I'm just wondering if that's coming into the conversation and maybe how do I word this? Maybe what you have to, no, not, that's not how to say it. I'm sorry, I'm stumped. Maybe, are people asking you what the difference would be? Maybe that's what I'm trying to ask.
Sure. So a little bit. They're not so much asking me like what the difference is with me. They're asking me more so what do I bring to the table, right? Because I find people aren't really looking at me to go, are you better or worse? They're going like, what do you got, right? Which I appreciate. And personally, I prefer it that way. And so what I bring to the table is, so with the military, I currently work within operations and training. I've been doing it for a few years. I did it throughout COVID. I worked on the Canadian Forces response to COVID. It was called Operation Laser, but I did work on that response. I actually received a commendation for my ability to plan and execute in a continuously evolving environment that was COVID, from the shutdowns to the reopenings to the what safety we're doing, what mandates we're doing, how we're redeploying, how we're moving forces. I worked in the Toronto Operations Center for a little bit of that. And so that's what I think I bring is I bring the experience of not just having operations or not just having leadership or training or working under stressful conditions. Like I have all of those, right? Leadership is the act of getting people to do things they don't want to do and thinking it was a great idea, right? And we're going to need that now more than ever, especially with like the strong mayor situation that just came into place. You know, if you're going to go against the mayor on what they veto, you don't need to just be strong enough to go, hey, I disagree. You got to go, hey, I disagree. And these other, the 65%, 66, including me, also disagree. You got to be able to bring everyone with you. And that's, you know, part of that is listening to your community, taking what they've got, packaging it, confirming, hey, like, I've understood you to be this. Is this what you're looking for? Yeah, perfect. Let's evolve. Let's move. Let's pivot. And now let's drive that forward. Right. And I feel like that's the step that's missing. Even at City Hall, right? Citizens are allowed to provide input at the committee level. Once it goes to council, it's only councillors. But let's be honest, most of the time, it doesn't hit the paper till it goes to council. So by the time you read about it, you're not allowed to input anymore unless you do it through your councillor.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. There's a culture change that needs to happen at City Hall. I've been saying that for at least 2 years, if not longer. It's the status quo is just not working. And I'm excited. That's why this election I'm excited for. I'm excited to see what can we do. We have an election. Yeah, we had a provincial one and people probably have PTSD from that. But we have this election. We can reset and we can move forward with fresh people, fresh ideas, new blood. And that's the way it should be. I really hope that people all over the city that are listening really, really think about who they're going to vote for on October 24th. I really do. With that said, I'd love to get into, you know what? I can get into ward-specific issues. You know what? There are, yeah. Let's talk about some ward-specific issues.
Sure.
Seeing as how I have a wealth of knowledge when it comes to Ward 3. Usually I bring this up in when we talk about affordable housing and the unhoused, and we'll get to that a little bit. But were you aware that they commissioned a building on the northwest corner of 8th Street and Lakeshore? The building's already there. They were going to convert it into a homeless shelter. And now that's not happening. Whether it was public outcry or the councillors changed their mind, it's no longer happening. Were you aware of that?
I heard of it. And I recently heard of the Helen Keller Center opening. It's supposed to be 150. I think it's at 158th Street over by 8th and Islington.
Mm-hmm.
That one just opened. And that one's actually going to be, I believe that just opened. Or is about to. And that one's supposed to be affordable housing for people with like deaf and blind type disabilities. Not homeless.
Is it on Lakeshore or on 8th Street?
I thought it was on 8th. I could be
okay,
wrong.
Yes. No, because so that's where the Royal Canadian Legion used to be and they shut it down. So they rebuilt it there, which is a great facility. You know, we do not have enough resources for the deaf and blind communities. 100%. I agree with that. You know, we lived in you know what, I'll say it because I'm not beholden to anybody. So I'll say it. We lived in the Birmingham Homes Co-op, which is, it's corrupt. And I don't mind saying that because I used to be on the board. It's corrupt. I would love the city to run a deep city audit on that place. I don't know how other co-ops are run, but that one is crooked. And let me tell you something, anytime the residents need something, whether it's new carpet, they want new floors, they want whatever it is that they want, you know how they get it? They just join the board. And then they join the board and they vote on their own unit, which is a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
But they get it. And it's and the city subsidizes the co-op. So really it's kind of the city is paying. I don't know how the funds are contributed once they get to the co-op, but the point is that it's a conflict of interest that shouldn't be happening. Sorry, I went on a tangent there.
No, don't even worry.
So that's where the Royal Canadian Legion used to be. We had a deaf lady that used to live in one of the units in the Birmingham Homes Co-op. And I think she's either in jail or out of jail because she killed somebody. And that's a real story. It's not fake. It's not. They can fact check it and it'll check out. I don't know what happened. I don't know the particulars. I wasn't there. I just heard what happened. So that's unfortunate. And also, you know what? Birmingham Homes Co-op doesn't have the whatever infrastructure or the community liaison. Is that the right word? for deaf and blind people to be living in that co-op because there's no supports for them. That's what I'm trying to say. There's no supports for them. Where this facility, it sounds like there's going to be supports for those people. So that's an amazing thing. But the building I'm referring to is the northwest corner of it's on Lakeshore at 8th Street. Okay. It used to be remember, okay, so there's the Byway Bargain Dollar Store.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So right years ago, right next to it, that the tall building in there used to be another dollar store, but they shut down.
Okay. Okay. So, I know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that was supposed to be
converted into a homeless shelter.
Okay. And then it got shut down or just never really took off.
I don't know if, again, I don't know if it was because of community outcry or whatever. And then that's one issue. And then the second issue, which is a good thing, but also can be considered a bad thing, is Humber College is buying up the whole Lakeshore.
Yep. Yep. And that's a weird one too, right? Because they're gobbling up, but they're not giving it to students, right? Like, it's not like, oh, here, your student housing is very awful for you in this area. No. They're still charging them and they're charging above market. Like, let's be honest, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's exacerbating the problem by forcing students now to be like, well, do I live here or not? And if they don't, they're still fighting now with everybody else for housing.
Absolutely.
So it's just driving everyone further, relying more on either transit or realistically getting in a car because the transit isn't reliable enough.
Absolutely. And then thirdly, are you aware, I don't know if they're Humber College owned, but there are parking lots now on the northwest portion. Sorry, more, I guess, north portion of Birmingham Street that would be east of Kipling. It's actually right across from Birmingham Homes Co-op. There's a brand new parking lot. You know, if they're going to build something, you know what would have went really good there? An apartment building or two for people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's common sense, no?
Well, that's it, right? Like, we're trying to tackle this housing problem, but we're not really building houses. Like, it's insane.
Yeah.
Right.
And the prices for I'll tell you, I'll be honest. I lived on 8th Street north of Lakeshore in the quote unquote crummy buildings. I'm saying that, not you. They were crummy, but you know what? It's a place to live. Sorry about that.
No worries.
It's a place to live. I apologize for that noise. Give me one second here. I'm just going to take off the Bluetooth and then that'll solve the problem. I forgot to shut my phone off. There we go.
Don't worry about it. I'll be honest. I took advantage of this to put mine on airplane.
No, it's just, you know what? I love that neighborhood. I came to love it, you know, because like I said, my wife grew up there. She went to Lakeshore Collegiate. My daughter graduated from Lakeshore Collegiate. We love the area, but as we'll get into later, I'll tell you why we left. But let's talk about the budget real quick. Yeah. You know, Toronto's bleeding money. We've got a $1.6 billion backlog in TCHC repairs. The TTC is going to be $500 million short on their funding, according to their own numbers. And, you know, we have Mr. CEO getting a 21% increase. And I'm just wondering what needs to happen, what you think, and, you know, what do you see for in terms of budget wise for the next 4 years of council?
Absolutely. So, first off, I think part of the solutions that I need to bring to the table aren't just, you know, pie in the sky or, you know, the government needs to figure out, right? Because I'm trying to tell you how I want to be government to fix it, right? And so for me, it becomes a managing of the priorities, but not in the sense of like, oh, we got to do this, but not that. Because the reality is like, you know, the LRT, everyone knows it's expensive. Everyone knows it's gone over time. You can't abandon it, even though it costs, like you can't leave that to fund something else, right? So it's managing priorities. But I think one thing that we're not really doing well enough is the prevention/education side of it. Right? It's easier and frankly, more cost effective to prevent something from happening than from punishing for someone after the fact, right? Like it's easier to teach you why drugs are terrible than to arrest you after the fact when you're already addicted, right? It's easier to teach you how to cook and how to go to the grocery store and shop healthy and cook for yourself and your family than it is to help you lose weight through surgery later on because everything's gone to hell with your health, right? It's easier to teach you about mental health and like coping strategies and how to recognize it in other people and how to talk to them and help them find services than it is to pick someone up once they've already crashed. And so that's what I mean by managing our priorities, right? We need to get more in line with prevention, more in line with education, right? The more people know, the less bad like problems they'll get themselves into, right? Education is your friend in everything. And then that ties into the other half of it being enforcement. And I don't mean enforcement in the sense of like, again, going out and arresting all these people. I mean, enforcement in the sense of, you know, one of my ideas is to get more bylaw officers to enforce our bylaws, right? And the reason that generates revenue is sure, you're spending money on bylaw guys or and girls, you know, but if the buildings are choosing to comply and do everything, you're going to generate revenue through permits and permit fees and licensing and all that kind of stuff. And if they don't want to play ball, no problem. The residents will complain, the bylaw officers show up and they'll get fines. Like one way or another, they're going to play ball and put money into the city. One way they do it through being proactive and taking care of things, prevention, which is going to be cheaper for them, or they choose not to, and no problem. Residents will let us know. We send the bylaw officers, and now we have enough of them to be like, cool, these are the problems, and we're going to be checking up on it. Here's your fines, right? One way or another, they're going to pay up, and that's what's going to allow us to manage our priorities, invest in the easier parts, and I mean easier because it's again, it's easier to prevent than it is to put the cat back in the bag, and enforcement is our solution, and it's not enforcement on all of us, you know, the guy trying to get to work every day. It's enforcement on the big players that are affecting so many of us every day, right? How many complaints did you hear about over the summer with air conditioning units, temperatures, water quality, water temperature, water in general, right? Some places just didn't even get it. So like, we all say, oh, that's not acceptable. We don't need to have that enough. But the steps aren't taken to prevent it, and the steps aren't being taken to enforce the measures against it. So like, let's be honest, at this point for them, it's the price of admission, right? It's the cost of doing business at this point. If you only get one fine for the 100 things you did.
Absolutely.
Right.
Like, and
I
was just going to say, you know, a lot of the candidates are saying that they would support a citywide audit. And I'm interested in your opinion on that.
Absolutely. But it depends on what our intent is, right? Is if the intent is we're going to comb through every cent to be like, oh, look at this awfulness. Sure, and it's necessary, but like, just because something in a rear view lens looks less desirable doesn't mean at the time it was a terrible decision, right? And so we need to balance the need for opening the books with the needs of trying to judge a previous decision through today's lenses, right? And that's my only hesitation, not because I don't want to do it. Totally agree, we should do it. We need to keep in mind the lens we were looking at through when those decisions were made, because they weren't necessarily terrible decisions at the time, right? It might have been the best decision made with the information, or, you know, the most reasonable decision with the information. And so we balance the two. I'm all for it, right? Like if you're just going on a witch hunt or whatever, no one has time for that. Let's make some change happen. But if we're going to go through, look at it, lessons learned, you know, what did we do? What went right? What went wrong? 100%. We need to do that. And we should be doing that every step of the way.
I like that. I like that a lot. Let's move along to transit. Now we've seen transit, expanded into the north, into York region. I'm interested on your opinion on whether you would support it expanding in the west into Peel region, in the east into Durham region. Overall, what you see for transit in the next 4 years, and are the people of your ward ever going to get to ride on that subway? Because the buses, come on. I gotta say that's my other thing. I wanted to wait to voice it in this category, but I gotta say, between winter and the construction, those streetcars are never running. Why are they there? Let's build a subway and call it a day. I don't know your thoughts.
So let's start with Lakeshore then, because Lakeshore is a great one in my opinion, because no matter what you're thinking we should be doing, we've managed to like bobble all of the options, right? Like it blows my mind that we've renovated the streetcar tracks themselves how many times, but it's an electric bus that runs up and down that road.
Yes.
To this day, like it's open now, but it's still an electric bus that goes up and down, right? And some people will say, well, you know, this is the best subway ride. It runs along the lake. You know, streetcar ride. It runs along the lake, beautiful scenery. You get to see business. Sure, I agree. But we're not running a streetcar. So that's kind of shocking. You know, and then other people are like, oh, I'd love to see a subway. It's way faster. It's more convenient. You know, you don't deal with traffic anymore. Yeah, I totally agree. But for some reason, we're not doing subways either. We decided that that's not good, even though the rest of the world thinks they're amazing.
I think, honestly, do you want my opinion?
Yeah, of course.
I think that people associate subways with Rob Ford, and a lot of people, the majority, unfortunately, don't like him. And so that I think it plays into it. I know they're costly. I know they take time to build. But, you know, if you look in other countries in the world, I did an interview recently. I can't remember who it was, but they said, look how fast there was. I don't know if it was in China or Taiwan. They built a subway inside of a year or 2 years. Boom. It was a big, huge expansion. And yeah, they have more people. So there was probably more people doing it. But still, they got it done. Like you said, we're in the top five in North America in terms of a population, and in terms of you know, bigness, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Why? Look at New York. New York runs perfect. Okay, maybe not perfectly, but they've got a huge subway system. Everyone gets where they're supposed to. I don't see the problem in taking their template and copying it up here. I really don't.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I have a bit of a personal theory. It's not crazy enough to be conspiracy, and I do apologize for that, but I do have a bit
of a theory. I'd love to hear it.
So I think the reason everyone's mad about transit, and maybe a little bit about Rob Ford and all that, but I think it's because our transit almost feels like a punishment. And to use an example from this past weekend, and I was talking to people, and everyone was like, yep, you're totally right. I was at Taste of the Kingsway. You know, meeting people, giving out flyers and all that. And I needed to get down to the lakeshore. I wanted to go down to Funny Bones, a cafe for board games, to check it out.
I know that place.
Okay, so that was it. That was my whole movement. I wanted to go from Taste of the Kingsway to Funny Bones. My options were a 42-minute transit ride, even though I was already at a subway station, or 11 minutes in my car. Like, that's, like, actively punishing me for wanting to take transit. And it goes for everyone, right? So, like, no wonder everyone chooses the 11-minute car ride. Well, except now we all chose the 11-minute car ride, so now it's actually 22 minutes. But even at 22, you're still half the time as the bus. Like, we are actively punishing people for choosing the bus. And for those who don't have a choice, we're doubly punishing them, right? And so I feel like that's why everyone is going to be strong. And I don't mean it quite this strong, but I'm going to say that I think that's why everyone feels like they hate transit. It's not because it's bad. It's not because, like, you know, what, have you ever met a transit worker you didn't really like? No, like, they're all friendly. It's the service. And it's not because at an individual granular level, they're bad, or, you know, they hate Toronto, or they hate, no, it's just, they don't have the resources and support they need. So, you know, like everyone else in every other job, oh, they're wearing multiple hats and they're trying to do more with less. Well, we're a world-class city. We don't need to do more with less, right? So why do we try to do that? And why do we punish people for taking transit, right? If transit was an actual viable solution to actually get around the city of Toronto, just by the very nature of that, traffic would be better without even making the roads bigger. Forget making anything bigger. Just by virtue of more people being on some type of public transportation, the roads would be a little bit better. But that includes that investment. And that's the hard part to bite off in the beginning, right? Like, there's subway expansion into Peel region, right? You know, you've heard the rumor mill of it going to Square One, or of it going to Sherway. You know, I think both of those are great destinations, right? They're popular with people, right? Maybe people will come to Toronto purely for the, I will take the subway to Sherway and then to Square One. They're literally internationally known.
Personally, I think that the wing to Square One should be a separate wing, because I think it should go down to Sherway from Kipling. And then I believe it should go from Sherway to Long Branch, and then along the bottom, stopping at, you know, Humber College, Islington, Mimico, Park Lawn, St. Joe's.
And I agree with you. And I've been calling that closing the loop. Because, like, again, it's weird that you can go through the north end of this ward or the south end of the ward, but don't you ever dare think about crossing lines. You can't do both. And it's weird. And so, like, I don't really like LRT myself. I've had people tell me, what about an LRT from Sherway down Brown's Line, right? And I'd be like, okay, like, that's not a bad idea. I'm not a fan of LRT, just like I'm not a fan of streetcar. I feel like they just continue to add to the traffic. But the public sentiment is there for something to move people efficiently from the north end of the ward, you know, Sherway, Bloor, that type of Dundas, that area, down to the lakeshore. Well, and vice versa, of course, right? People want that. And that's not really on the radar right now. And I think it should be.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. I've been saying that for, again, for at least a year, if not longer. I just don't understand. Like you said, how many times were the tracks changed? Why are we wasting that money?
Exactly.
It's wasting it.
Right. Look at any other city that you not even consider world-class. And I don't mean this as a slate to the cities I'm about to say, but just, you know, some people will disagree and whatever, right? But you look at Philadelphia, New York, London, France, Rome, their subway systems are massive. You know, China does the trains and stuff, but because they do space and they do a little like above ground and they have the space and they do a little bit different. But again, it's mass high speed transit that everyone's putting money into. And we're like, maybe not so much. And it's like, well, why not?
Like, exactly. You're preaching to the choir. I love it.
Yeah, no, and that's my big thing. And again, going back to like how it punishes us, right? Like, again, you have 4 subway stations, 3 GO stations. Oh, we're going to go to Toronto. It's Matthew's birthday. Well, I got to leave now. I know we're having a great time because, like, if I don't, it's an Uber or we're sleeping outside. Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I guess we're all going home now. And then the party goes on to the subway because you have to leave.
Mm-hmm. Or you can take, you know, you can take the bus from Queen or wherever you are downtown, but look forward to waiting for the bus for maybe up to an hour, if not longer. And then the bus ride home is another hour, maybe a little bit more, depending on where you get off.
Yep. Yeah. If you're lucky enough to get picked up quickly, the ride still takes forever. Right. And like, it's not because of traffic. It's 1 in the morning. Right. And so again, that brings us back. Like, it's almost like a punishment to choose that, you know, hey, I'm going to have some drinks. I'm going to take the bus. I'm going to be the responsible person today. Well, don't have too much fun because the bus isn't coming all night. Right. Yep. You know what? I don't want to add to the traffic. I don't want to pay for parking. Again, don't stay all night. Like, it's weird that for whatever personal reason you've chosen not to drive downtown, you all have the same limitation. And that's incredibly awkward to me. I find it so weird that you could be downtown of a world-class city with no way to get out. Like, that's the beginning of a zombie movie.
You're exactly right. Let's move along to unhoused and affordable housing. Of course, we already touched on the shelter, but yes. You know, I'm sure you watched as I watched as the mayor ordered the police into Trinity Bellwoods Park to remove the people, throw out all their stuff, and rob them of the only thing they had left, which was their dignity. I'm just wondering, like, what more can we do to help these people? I want to help them. I'm sure that the mass majority of the city of Toronto wants to help them, but what's the answer? Nobody can seem to come up with the answer. I guess maybe you have to address the problem to know the answer. I'm not sure what that looks like. I'd love to get your opinion. And then on the affordable housing contingent, I'm glad you mentioned that. All the ones that have gone on in the last 10 years, the ones that are going up on Queensway, as far as I was to understand, this is what I've been told. There was, maybe there isn't anymore. There used to be, there was, there still is. I don't know. An affordable housing contingent, whether it's 5%, 10%, whatever the number is. And so there's a legal loophole where the developers can sell a few of the units, 5 to 10, maybe 15%, either like below market or at market level, something like that. And that's considered affordable housing. That legal loophole, in my opinion, needs to be closed. I'd love to get your opinion on all that. And now I'll lay out and you could talk.
Yeah, no worries. No worries. So I'll start with the developer one, with the properties, because I understand it to be relatively the same. I don't personally know of anything different enough to say, hey, you're wrong about that. So that's how I understand it as well. I think we've taken
Just before you start, if I am wrong, you can tell me I'm wrong.
No, that's how I understand it as well.
Okay.
Because the problem I find with it is that they go, yeah, we're going to make a few affordable units. It'll be fine. In phase 5, in phase 6, in phase 7, they gobbled them up at market rate. What did you want us to do? Well, no, we wanted you to sell those affordable. Like, what part of that was confusing, right? And so I think the big problem with that is that we do this thing where we're like, hey, okay, so like, Matthew, I want you to go out, grab all your profits. When you tell me your bank account's full and you got enough, yeah, we'll roll into phase 2. And they're like, okay, cool, man. Like, my bank account's not full. What now? Right? So this is like, and so I find it weird. And so like, if we're going to incentivize them, I would say the only incentive we want to give is, cool, you want an incentive? Like, roll your affordable stuff to phase 1. You know, maybe phase 2. I'm not going to pretend to be a complete expert on how they build these. I want to champion an idea like that though, right? If you want some type of developer incentive, your affordable housing rolls out closer to the beginning than to the back end, right? Like open with that kind of stuff. You know, maybe it's not act one, but like it can't be after the credits have rolled, right? And so that's, I think, the only way we can really tackle that, because like, I can't see a future where the city of Toronto is dedicated enough to fight them legally on it. I don't. And so let's not waste the money fighting them. Let's absorb it for what it is. And let's roll those affordable units further to the front. Let's make it a priority, because it is a priority and it's on everyone's mind, right?
I'm just going to jump in. When I hear the term affordable housing, I'm thinking rental units, but it's never, ever rental units, is it?
No, rarely ever. And even when they do build an actual rental building, it doesn't get the same affordable housing, like discounts or any of that. It's only for purchases as far as I see it as well. So that's where I feel like they need to start prioritizing the affordability and maybe even change the definition of what is affordable with regards to development, new developments, right? Change what that is. Cause yeah, like if you told me you sold anything at 100% of fair market value, you didn't make it more affordable. Mm-hmm. You sold it for what it's worth, right? And so that's where I think we need to do that. But then we also need an expansion on the other side of it, right? So for example, there's the multi-unit residential acquisition program. Supposed to help nonprofits buy and renovate housing and boarding units to turn them into a permanently affordable housing. Great idea. Amazing. In the first year, it was funded with $10 million. That's a drop in the ocean in Toronto. And in the second year, this most recent year, it was funded with $20 million. Sure, great. It doubled, but like that's still a drop in the ocean. I believe it created somewhere in the neighborhood of 56 apartments and, oh no, 50 apartments and 66 boarding house like units, something in that neighborhood. Either way, I made a little over 100 units. Like,
for which
you're never gonna hit 40,000 by 2030 at that pace.
So this is the 10 million and 20 million together for those units.
Technically, actually, it's a little bit less, because the first 10 million, only 3.5 of that was earmarked for like brand new, like let's go do stuff.
Okay.
The other 6.5 million was for projects already approved. So, you know, you want to include it or not, I don't believe the numbers did. These are the numbers from the City of Toronto's website themselves.
Okay.
And so they said for last year, they created, I believe it was 50 and 66. So, you know, what is that? 116 units. That you're never going to hit 40,000 by 2030 if you're doing 116 a year. You know, and even if you multiply that by 10, you know, you 10X that somehow. Okay, cool. 1,000 units isn't going to get us there.
What about the legalization of rooming houses? How do you feel about that?
So that ties back into with bylaw enforcement. Like, I'm great. Like, let's do it. But if they're going to be in disrepair, if they're going to be unsafe, if they're going to be hot boxes in the summer and cold ice boxes in the winter, like, you know, that doesn't help anybody. Right. And so again, that comes in with like, with our bylaw officers, one of two things happen: either business or like the apartments, the managers themselves go, you know what? I don't want to deal with bylaw permits. Everything looks great. Everyone feels great. And the city generated revenue through the normal, supposed to be followed mechanisms, or they choose to do some of the shenanigans and bylaw, the residents complain, bylaw shows up and there's enough of them to enforce the rules, right? Part of my bylaw thing is I also think we need more of the investigation related professionals, right? Whether they be the inspections, the auditors, professionals that can actually go in and look at it, like whatever the case may be. But again, we need to be able to enforce these rules. Otherwise, it's just the cost of doing business.
I also think that, this is off topic on the topic we're talking about, but I think that maybe a general update of the bylaws might be necessary. You know, the last time I checked the bylaws, they could have deleted this by now. I'm not sure. But the last time I read the bylaws, I swear to God, this is true. I swear to God. It says that it is illegal to walk your alligator down Yonge Street on a leash on Sundays. Doesn't say anything about Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, only Sundays. I don't understand that. I don't know if it's, but the one of the last times I read the bylaws, that was in there. And it just blows my mind. Why hasn't that just been, it's archaic, obviously. Who has an alligator?
But have you ever been bitten by an alligator on Yonge Street on a Sunday?
No.
So it's working.
I don't I don't even know what the fine would that for that would be.
No, me neither. I don't even, do they give you your arm back? Like, I don't even know. No, but like, exactly. We need to update the bylaws. Like, let's be honest. Like, in the last, even if they were updated 10 years ago, the world has changed quite a bit in 10 years, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and then if you go even further back in time, which I'd imagine a lot of the laws do, you're going more and more into an era that doesn't exist anymore, right? And so I agree with you. They need to be updated and they need to be enforced.
Absolutely.
We need to bring everything up into 2022.
Absolutely.
And the future, of course.
So let's move on and talk about crime and police. I got a lot of things to say, and a lot of them are about Ward 3, and they're not good.
That's okay.
I want to start off the top by saying that I have complete respect for anyone that puts on a badge and does the job of a police officer. 100%. I wanted to be a cop when I was a kid. Asthma, couldn't do it, but I have complete respect. However, there are bad apples in every police force, not just Toronto. A lot of them, I feel, come out of 22 Division. That's just my personal take, having lived there for 13 years and I've seen what I've seen. The violence that has taken over Lakeshore and 10th Street is ridiculous. As I said, we lived in the Birmingham Homes Co-op. I had a neighbor that got shot in the leg on the way to the store in broad daylight.
Oh, wow.
They started dealing drugs out of the basketball court. You know the one I'm talking about.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. Or the one in the courtyard, right?
Yeah. And then when, I guess when winter came one year, they moved into the apartment building. They quote unquote took over one of the ground floor units because it was easier to deal drugs out of the ground floor unit than going up in the elevator. So they held this unit hostage and did their business there. And then that led to, you know, drive-by shootings right into that apartment, that whatever that apartment was. And the people that lived on either side of that particular unit both moved, didn't want to be there anymore. Can't blame them.
Yeah.
One time, shooting started in the park. I thought my son was in the park. So did my wife, but he wasn't in the park, but we didn't know that at the time. You know, and then we were like, nope, we're out of here. This is it. You know, and it's also, I'll tell you, on holiday weekends. So where there's a holiday, for example, it's either two nights or one night. They buy all the neighborhood kids buy a bunch of fireworks and they have some sort of a war games style competition where they're shooting fireworks at each other. Like they hold them in their hand. They're shooting them at people that are just walking by, innocent bystanders. They're shooting them at cars, at buses. They're even brazen enough to shoot them at police officers, and the police officers, for the most part, leave. They don't engage. I don't understand it. More has to be done for that community. I decided I had enough and we left. We live in Ward 1 now.
Okay.
So we had enough and we left. But that doesn't mean that I stopped caring about Ward 3. I love it. You know, maybe one day we're going to retire there. I don't know. But I have an affinity for that area. I just don't want to live in it in its current model. So I say all that to say, what do you think about the crime rate? You can comment on things I've said. And I'm interested in your opinion on the job that the Toronto police are doing.
Yeah. So because of the army, there's a lot of guys who leave the military and go to policing. So I have a lot of cop friends myself. Huge respect for the cops, all the EMS, right? Fire, paramedics, cops. Mm-hmm. Huge respect for them, huge love for them. I feel, I feel like a lot of this ties to the same thing. I don't feel like they have all the support they need either, right? What I mean by that specifically is, well, actually, I'll start with a little bit of what I'm thinking and then kind of go into like how I've come full circle myself even actually. Okay. I think a large part of this is prevention, right? That dollar in prevention is worth $10 in solution later, right? Mm-hmm. So, education, educate people on the harms of drugs, gangs, the violence, all of it, right? Educate on that. That helps prevent. And obviously that's not going to delete the problem. Anyone who tells you that if you educate people, it'll go away, like it won't, it's not 100%. But then that education will slow a little bit of it. And so now I'll take you to where kind of I've gone on a big circle myself. So I agree. I think we do need more police presence in that area. So I know the area very well. I work with the Toronto Scottish Regiment in the military, and they share the police college there on Birmingham, right? At Birmingham and what is that, second? Yeah. Well, our entrance is on second.
Yeah.
Whereas the police one is closer to fourth, I believe. And so I know the area. We've heard some of the violence there ourselves, right? Because I work sometimes at night, you hear it, right? Like, we're not immune to it any more than anyone else is. So I was thinking we need more of a police presence. My mind honestly was more into like a satellite police station, maybe more so than like a full blown presence. And so that kind of started off, and I went out, started door knocking. I met some people and they were like, well, you know what? I don't really like police. I want more crisis response teams. And I was like, okay, fair. And I agree. We do need more of those, but those go hand in hand, right? Like a social worker doesn't necessarily want to walk into an extreme situation at 3 a.m. any more than a cop can maybe handle a less explosive situation at 10 a.m, right? It's not because either of them are bad. It's not everyone is equipped for every single situation, right? And so if we increase one, we're going to need to increase the other because they go together, right?
Also, gang violence is gang violence. Mental health crisis is mental health crisis. Agreed. And at least for what I've witnessed, it's more of the gang violence nature.
Yeah. And so that's where, so I started thinking more crisis response. And then actually at Taste of the Kingsway, I met a couple of officers at the event, like as police officers, not as in like civilians, like as police officers. So they're part of what's known as a neighborhood community officers program. And so naturally I was like, tell me more. Like, I'm in. So the way it works is they're assigned a small geographic boundary. I'm going to make it up. I'm going to say, 10 square neighborhoods or so. Again, I made that up. It may be a little bit bigger, maybe a little bit smaller. But that's the only area they patrol. They don't respond to calls outside of it. They don't go to anywhere else. That's all they deal with, that one little area. And what they said they like about it is people still don't call the cops, but people will go, hey, Steve, that guy over there, this is what's going on. And so they are able to get more information. And because of that, they're able to be more present. And again, this comes into prevention, right? Hey, tomorrow is going to be a big thing in the courtyard. Cool. They show up to the courtyard before anyone else. No one's going to roll in on the police. Right. Just like the police don't really want to roll in on someone else. Right. It creates a violent scenario. So no one really wants that. But if they have the heads up in advance, they can get there first. Well, now no one wants to roll onto them anymore. Right. And so it's kind of prevention, but it's that relationship. These neighborhood community officers, they only deal with that area. They're there every day. That's their territory. That's their shift. That's the community that they take care of. And so everyone knows them on a first name basis. And they said they love that. They were like, I don't honestly know if I want to go back to like just being a normal cop. Like, I love this neighborhood community officer. So now personally, I'm really sold on the idea of neighborhood community officers.
That's amazing. I did want to get your opinion. One of the mayoral candidates is pushing for reinstitution of carding and the Tavis police program. And I'm just wondering if you have a comment on that or how you feel about it, anything you want to say.
So if you want to talk to me, like theoretically, does carding work? I'll tell you, yeah, sure. Theoretically, but once you put it into actual practice, like a lot of things, the wheels fall off the wagon pretty quickly. Right. I don't want to say that they're targeting, racialized or marginalized communities deliberately, but like the numbers show that that's what happens in the long run. Right.
I've witnessed it.
Yeah. Like it's what happens, right? Like I myself am Latino. I don't really look at that much, but even I've had to deal with that. Right. Like I've gone to the airport and they're like, whoa, Valle, tell me more. And I'm like, okay, man, like I'm just going to New York to watch the Yankees. Like, I don't know what you want from me. Right. Like, sorry, guy, I have a job here. I have a house here. I have a mortgage. Like, I'm going to come back. They're like, don't worry. And so I've seen that in small ways. Like I've seen it traveling with the military where they're like, oh, could you take your boots off? I'm like, are we really doing this? Right. So I can see how something like that can get out of hand in an area that's already marginalized. Right. And so do I agree with it? Sure, theoretically, maybe. In practice, not really, especially if we can't point to tangible evidence that goes like, look at these examples that show it works definitively, right? If we don't have that kind of framework, then to me, you don't have the right to go bother people. And I don't want to use the word harass because they're not deliberately going out of their way to harass people. But for the person who gets that, is subject to that, that is harassment. Even if it's not done to harass or, to do that to them, it feels that way. And so if we can't point to anything concrete, facts and evidence being like, this is where it worked specifically and definitively, and this is how we're going to execute it, I don't want anything to do with it. If it can lend itself to abuse, you know, 99 times out of 100, it won't be abused. But that one time, that person didn't need that in their life. And for the officer themselves, if they're sitting there second guessing, like, is this right? Did you really give them a tool, or did you give them one more headache to deal with on the fly? Right. And so I don't really agree with the practice. You know, if you, maybe there's, you know, we're going to modify it in these ways, and, you know, maybe you can convince me. But if we're just going to go back to the way it was, you're not going to convince me, because I don't believe that, well, it didn't prevent crime for sure, because it was all done after the fact. I didn't read anything saying that it solved crime either. So what are we doing it for? Right. If it's not preventing and it's not solving, like, what are we really doing here?
And what about Tavis?
Which one's Tavis? Sorry.
Tavis is, it's like a task force, but for some reason it was disbanded or shelved or whatever word you want to use, because it was deemed racist. I'm not sure on the particulars. I'd have to read up on that, but, I guess it's to help deal with localized gang warfare. And I guess because the general public maybe assumes that most gang members are African-American, then by virtue, Tavis is racist. I'm not sure. And okay. So I don't want to speculate, but that would probably be my guess if I was forced to answer that.
Okay. Well, so, you know, without obviously being able to dive too deep into the program for what it is, but if we're taking a uniformed police officer who already patrols, you know,
Actually, let me correct you there, because I don't think they're uniformed, but go on. Oh,
okay. Well, I was just going to say, like, we're taking a uniformed guy and or girl, you know, officer, and then just narrowing their role. Again, if we don't have the evidence to say that narrowing it in this very specific manner works definitively, like, why would we limit them in what they can do, right? Why would we limit their ability to affect the neighborhood, in a positive way? By telling them, oh, no, if you see, you know, this, it's less important, go deal with this other thing instead. Like, if they're there and they're present and they're doing it, like, let them do their job, right? Let them go out, let them do their job, let them meet people, let them enforce the laws that already exist, and let's keep those going, right? Right? How often do we see all sorts of things where you're just like, why does this happen every day, right? Like, I have, there's a don't turn right on red near me that every single day I see 100 cars blow through it on the red, and I'm like, yes, you know, in the grand scheme of the world, it's whatever, but like, well, like, let's change that sign or let's enforce the law. But like, what are we doing here?
Absolutely.
Right. And so if we're going to limit them in any way, like, let's make sure we've got the facts or the evidence that shows that this works, or we have a very clear, this is what we're trying to achieve. This is how we're going to achieve it. This is how we're going to measure success. And if we don't measure to what we decide preemptively is success, how are we going to wrap this up? Right. I feel a lot of programs open and it's just like, oh, is it working? Well, it hasn't stopped. Okay, but that's not a measure of success. That just means it's still going. You're just throwing money at it.
I like your way of thinking. I really do. Let's move on to public health. I'm interested to know your opinion, because you were there, you said it. Your opinion on how the city handled the pandemic at the municipal level. What we've learned from the pandemic, and in your opinion, are we ready for the next pandemic?
So overall, the pandemic's obviously a touchy subject for everyone, regardless of what side of all of it you land on. But I felt like the pandemic, what was weird about it was it went one of two ways. It didn't matter who you were. It didn't matter what you do, what your background is. Everyone's experience went one of two ways. Either you got to work from home and you saved money on transportation and eating lunch at the office, or you had a miserable time and either lost your job or were forced to continue to go in as a frontline worker. And, you know, pandemic pay kicked in and then pandemic pay stopped, even though the pandemic didn't, right? Like, we kind of left workers and small business owners in the lurch being like, what do you mean? What's the problem here? And so I felt it went one of two ways. Either your life continued moderately okay, maybe even a little bit better because you work from home now, or your life really, you got kind of raked over the coals and either didn't have a job or you were forced to go in every day with limited resources, limited everything. You know, how many businesses you walk into and they're like, oh, you know, we're understaffed. You know, we're all wearing multiple hats. We're all trying to make more with less. Well, like, why was that allowed, right? How did we get there? You know, how did we get to a place where, you know, all the big box mega stores were allowed, oh, what else are they going to do? They have to sell TVs. And then all the small businesses were like, whoa, dude, clearly you can get COVID in this little store. Like if it's good for the geese, it's good for the gander, right? Like it's goes all the way, cuts all the way, or it doesn't. And so I feel like that's what created the divide with COVID. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's where people feel either left behind or they go, oh, what are you complaining about? Right. And so we need to be more empathetic to the other side. And that's where public health kicks in. Right. You know, Ward 3, for example, right now has no hospital, right now has no urgent care. They're in the works of reopening the Trillium Hospital, but that's going to be very specialized, right? It's going to be for very specific injuries, long-term live-in rehab, acute rehab, right? Center for Seniors. It's not going to be urgent care, right? So there's those types of facilities, like you know, you get on telehealth. I'm a big fan of telehealth. If you don't have to they put a drain on the resources, it's like, don't. But telehealth tells you, hey, go to urgent care. Well, we don't have one. And if you're leaving the ward, you're not searching out urgent care anymore. You're like, you're now in a different postal code. You're going to the hospital.
Exactly. You know, I used to live right at the corner of Browns Line and Lakeshore. And one time I had to go to the hospital and I'm like, oh, we're going to St. Joe's, right? And they're like, no, we're going to take you to Mississauga Trillium. It's closer. And I'm like, because this is before I drove, right? So I'm like, do I have enough money for double bus fare? Yeah. No, I don't.
Can my family come and see me? Right?
Exactly.
It's and again, it's another thing, right? Like right now, Ward 3, you fall and you break your leg and you're like, oh my God, I need a hospital. Yeah, your options are St. Joe's, Humber up in the north, or you're going to Mississauga.
And it, you know what? For its part, I will say St. Joe's is an amazing hospital.
Love that hospital. I have nothing bad to say about it. Love it. My son was born there, actually.
You know, the great part, you know, as soon as I say this, they're going to change it. The greatest part about St. Joe's is that if you have a sticker, you don't have to pay for parking. You can park on the residential streets behind the hospital. And now that I just said that and everyone's heard that, that's going to change.
Yeah, well, it's convenient and it's useful. Yeah, no, it's crazy that, well, like, let's be honest, like, why do we pay for parking at hospitals?
I think all parking in hospitals should be subsidized because you're either going there because you need help or you're going there to visit loved ones.
Yeah, you're not going there for like the gift shop. You're not like, oh, let me swing by Trillium, grab some gifts, and I'm heading over to Matthew's house.
Right?
No, you're there for one purpose. You're injured or ill, or your loved one is injured and ill. Why are we taxing you? Literally.
Exactly. When I'll tell you something real quick. When my mom was in the hospital in Mississauga Trillium, unfortunately, she passed away, but she was in there for like a month after she had a stroke. I was there as often as I could be there because of work and kids, but also because of money. It was $25 every time I went because that was the minimum, $25, $25. Yep. That gets expensive.
Oh yeah.
Honestly. I had to think of creative ways, but Mississauga Trillium, there's nowhere around to park for free. And if there is, you're walking, you know, a few dollars. Yeah.
A few. Yeah. It's crazy to me. Right. So my father had an injury in the last year and he broke his neck. He's wheelchair bound now. He's been in a couple of facilities. He still hasn't moved back home. Same thing. We all want to visit my brother, my mom and I, we all want to visit, but we got to pay for parking every single time. And so like, he's now like, hey guys, like this is expensive. And we're like, no, dad, like we're going to keep coming. Like we have to, like, but yeah, now we're getting creative. Like now I park way far away and I like it. I can't afford to park there every day. Like I'm a normal dude, right? Yeah. Like who can, right? Even the workers don't park there every day and they get a discount on the parking, right? Like it's crazy. And that brings me to like kind of the other things, like why don't we have more facilities on the whole, right? Like even, and to tie into public health, right? Like for example, community gardens, like the Alzheimer's Association tells you community gardens are fantastic for people with dementia, whether it's early onset, full blown, whatever. It's fantastic. It's a skill they either had or can learn. And they can share it regardless of what state of lucidity they're in. So like, yep. Why don't we have more of those everywhere, right?
Absolutely.
Why are we creating spaces where older people and younger people come together, right? We've seen around the world where spaces where senior citizens and like children come together, they both love it.
Absolutely. They both love
it, right? So like that ties in because like if we're keeping people healthier and happier, they're going to be in a hospital less often, right?
Absolutely.
Ties back into the public long-term care facilities we were talking about earlier, right? We have the one. What? Like, what are we doing here? And like COVID showed it. Public long-term care facilities stood tall. It was the private ones that had the military show up, right? Public facilities, they stood tall. They took care of their residents. you know, people want to say, oh, they're too heavy handed with the restrictions, this, that, and the other. Well, they kept the residents safe, right? Private didn't do that. Private didn't do that at all. Like I have personal friends of mine that were part of that side of the response that like went to the private facilities. And, you know, I don't want to get too much into whatever, but like the military report says it all. Mm-hmm. It was abysmal, right? And so why are we trending in that direction when the public option is the option that works, right? Mm-hmm. There shouldn't be dollars and cents involved if, hey, are we going to keep Matthew healthy? Well, we got to look at the books first. What? That should never even be a consideration.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, I know that you're running for Ward 3, but as a city councilor, I just wanted to make you aware of something. So the city of Pickering itself has no hospital. So the residents from Pickering either have to go to the Ajax Hospital or they come to Toronto to go to either a downtown hospital or most likely the Scarborough hospitals. And I feel like, it's great for Toronto, obviously, but for the citizens of Pickering, because there's no quote unquote regional transit in and out of Toronto, it goes back to our transit discussion. They're having to rely on other methods of travel to get back and forth to Scarborough. They really need a hospital of their own. And in our ward, not having a hospital, I thought you could maybe relate to that.
Yeah. So it ties into a few things, right? Because we're also talking about if people have the ability to afford multiple transit lines or drive there and park there, right? Like if they even have the ability, some people are choosing just like, okay, well, hey, loved one. Hey, mom. Hey, dad. Good luck. I'll see you when you get out of the hospital. Okay. I just can't afford to go there. Right. And like, it's wild that that's even a decision to be made in the first place. Right. And I think overall that again, takes us back a little bit to like, we need more of the resources. And that goes for everything, right? Like we have telehealth, but if telehealth tells you to go to urgent care, we don't have one.
But they're always going to tell you to go to urgent care.
That's because it's the safe bet.
And it's liability because if they exactly. say, if they say, oh, you don't need to go, and then something happens, they're liable.
Agreed. But we don't have an urgent care, right? And Pickering's in the same boat and we're all calling the same place and they all have the same liability. So we're all getting kind of forced in the same directions, yes. Right? To use one example that I think is a really good one is, for, and I believe this is a one that you believe in a lot, is mental health, right?
Yes.
I think we need way more. But like, for example, we have a ton of helplines. Great. So if you're in crisis, call the helpline. Awesome. But what if I'm not in crisis? What if I just recognize that I need assistance with mental health? That doesn't exist.
This is a little off topic, but I wanted to let you know, I'm working on it, but I started a not-for-profit that deals with that exact issue. So I'll send you more about it, but it's an organization. It's called Triumph Over Trauma.
I've heard of it.
We're on Instagram and we're on Twitter. I just started, my niece did the artwork. I think she did a very good job. So basically, our mission is to get mental health therapy to anyone who needs it, regardless of income, age, sex, gender, race, identity. Culture, identity, what it doesn't matter. You need help. I don't care if you're Britney Spears or you're Bob Sanders, you know, whoever. I don't care. You need help. We're going to provide it for you. Right now, we're in a funding stage. We're trying to get the money to get the business plan professionally done so that we can elicit private donations only. No public funding whatsoever. No government agency to come in and tell us what to do because we're not reliant on their dollars. We're only reliant on private funding enough to be able to hire a doctor to oversee the program. I don't really want to give it all away, but
no worries.
I think I've talked about it before. So, what the hell? I came up with the idea anyway. So if anyone does this, it came from me because it came from my head. So basically the doctor oversees the program. You have medical students who need hours as predicated by their school. They need a certain amount of, I think it's 450 patient hours. So you get 12 or 13 medical students, and they do the therapy with the patients. So everybody wins. The doctor gets paid, the medical students get their hours completed and the patients get medical therapy. And if their prescription needs to be made, that's what the doctor's for. Boom, everybody wins. And eventually in this facility, I want to add a soup kitchen to help with the unhoused people. And I want to have a lawyer, not someone who knows the law, not a legal assistant. I want to have a lawyer who will sit there and give free legal advice to anybody that asks, period. And if it's too much for one lawyer, hire another lawyer, whatever. I want to be able to deliver that. And the beautiful part about this is if this is successful in Ontario, you can take this model and you can apply it in every province in this country and eventually go to the United States. So this is something that I've been working on tirelessly along with this podcast, pumping out 5 episodes a week, you know. So I, not to mention, I don't know if you know, this soft topic, but I'm writing a short film as well. So all good things are happening. I am so happy we were able to get this interview. You know, this is the last week of interviews I'm doing. I think I have one left tomorrow, but I've had such a blast. You are knowledgeable and you're qualified based on your service record, which I know I thanked you in the beginning, but seriously, thank you. Because, you know, in the United States, you'd be forced into it, but here it's volunteer. And as a citizen of this country, man, I thank you so much.
No problem. Honestly, it's the support that makes it like awesome. You go out into the world, into Canada, and yeah, people thank you for your service. And it's a weird feeling, right? Because on the one hand, you're like, hey man, like I'm just doing what I thought was right. But on the other hand, you see the respect. And I appreciate it so much. Like I always tell people the same thing. Thank you for the support, right? Because without the support, the job's actually pretty awful. So mental health is one of my, for my community resources platform, that mental health is one of my proposed plans. Like helplines are great, but we need more than that. And it's got to be for everyone.
Well, unfortunately, you had one of the best mental health doctors leave St. Joe's and go to Burlington. I won't say his name, but he's a great doctor and he will be missed.
For sure.
I want to thank you so much for doing this interview, for trusting me to facilitate the process. I had a blast. I hope you had fun too. Can you tell the listeners your website, how they can contact you if they have any questions, comments, suggestions, and anything else that you want to say in your wrap up?
Absolutely. So my website again is vote4, so vote4marcovalley, vote4marcovalley.ca. My Instagram is also at vote4marcovalley. My Facebook is vote4marcovalley. All of them are linked from the website. The big thing that I'm super excited about is that on my website, I've got a roadmap, because I feel like we've been underserved and underrepresented. And so I want to meet with Ward 3. You know, if 100,000 of us, 103,000 actually, are on the voter list, if 103,000 of us are upset, like, let's get heard. Let's get listened to. Let's go get some change, get the change we want. And so that's why I'm releasing my platform. And the way I'm doing it is I'm kind of outlining what the current situation is. And then the things I want to do, right? Because I want to be at City Hall. So I want you to know what I think is the answer. Now, that being said, and I say it in all my platforms at the very bottom, they're living documents. These are what I believe the answer is. If, you know, the community reads it and they're like, hey, you know what? We like where you're at, but your aim's off a little bit. You got to adjust. I'm down. Like, let's adjust it. Like, I don't believe the current administration is right 100% of the time. I'm not going to be right 100% of the time. But the 141 plus thousand residents together are always right. And so that's what we got to listen to. That's the part we're lacking right now. Like, we have so many people in Toronto and everyone equally feels unheard, right? There's no one sitting there being like, no, whoa, my representation is actually fantastic. No one's saying that. So everyone's upset about it. And so from that, where I want to go, everything's a living document. If you reach out to me, whether it be by email, by social media, however you do it, I'm the one who reads it. I'm the one who responds every single time. There's no staffer, there's no volunteer. It's me. I will be the one that gets back to you every single time. And I want these conversations, and I encourage the tough questions and the tough conversations, because if everyone's just going, oh yeah, Marco, that's fantastic. Well, either they're not listening or they're not engaged, but either way, that's not good. So like, I want people to ask me these questions. I want people to hammer me on this, because I want this to be what we all want. We all want more facilities. We all want more resources. We all want more support in general. And frankly, and I've been saying it the same way the whole time, we need to invest in us.
Absolutely.
Right? That's what I've been saying the whole time. Invest in us, vote for the change, vote for access to all the things that we deserve. I feel like a lot of people are upset about taxes because, you know, you pay $1,000 worth of taxes, but you don't feel like you get $1,000 worth of services. Never mind the fact that by putting in our money together, you're supposed to be getting over $1,000 worth of services.
Absolutely. Yes.
Right. And so that's why we're upset. It's not because taxes are inherently bad or wrong or evil or whatever. It's because we all feel like we're pitching in $100 and not getting $100 worth of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's got to change. That's the big one. That's what I want to change. That's what I want to bring to the table. I want to bring the fierceness. Like, my job as a sergeant in the infantry was to tell people to do things that they may or may not have wanted to do. And the reason they did it, surely, you know, legally they're bound to, but it's also because they knew that they could trust me. They knew that I wouldn't put them into anything they couldn't handle. They knew I wouldn't tell them to do something I wouldn't do. And so I want to bring that intensity. I want to bring that strength for the ward to City Hall, right? I said it earlier, like, with this strong mayor thing coming in, if he's going to veto something, you need someone who can not just say, hey, I disagree. They got to go, hey, I disagree. And I've rallied the other counselors. The city doesn't want this, right? And so that's what we need. We need that strength. We need that forwardness. And we need someone who's unafraid to buck against the status quo. Because the same old is not doing it. You know, I think I bring a fresh face, a fresh perspective. You know, I think with my military service, I look at things a little bit differently. But I'm open to hearing everyone. And that's what we're lacking.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. And again, I want to thank you for this interview. I wish you nothing but luck on your campaign trail. You know, election night is always special for me. I always watch it with bated breath. I'm there not just watching the mayor race, I'm watching the ward races. And for this one, it's special for me because, you know, I've interviewed a whole bunch of candidates. So I want to see how they do. Unfortunately, I have to do that remotely because I'm going to be in North Carolina. So I'll be taking advantage of the early voting. Guys, early voting is October 7th to the 14th, and voting day is the 24th. Again, thank you for the interview. I wish you nothing but luck. And, you know, I'm excited to see what happens next. I'm excited for the next council for the City of Toronto.
No, thank you so much. I appreciate this so much. This was a fantastic opportunity. I had a blast. This was a ton of fun. I really appreciate the invite. Thank you for reaching out. I definitely appreciate it. Also, just to add on to your advanced voting, my vote is also open. Make sure you're able to vote. If you're not, update your information. That closes on the 23rd of September. It's called My Vote. Just to make sure you're good to go, make sure you can vote in your neighborhood and your ward. Make sure you're good to go. And then, yeah, advanced polling and then the actual election, right?
Awesome. And thank you.